We're going to be looking at some text this morning from the book of Exodus. And I have not already told the people in the back what the scripture is, because I like them to stay on their toes like we have to at camp. So, Catherine, this morning we're going to start with Exodus chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. Okay, Exodus chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. Our theme at camp this week was Exodus. And so for the last 3 weeks, I've had to read a lot of the story of Exodus. And it's always cool. I don't know if this ever happens to any of you, but it's like when you have these Bible stories that you're pretty sure you know really well, when you go back and you start reading them again, you see stuff that either you had forgotten or stuff you had not remembered or things that maybe you had just never seen. And so this morning, we're going to look at the excuses people make when God calls them. Now, if you go back and you read at the death of Moses, the scripture says that he was the greatest prophet. There still has not arisen a prophet in all of Israel like Moses. He is generally considered to be the great prophet of the people of Israel. He is the giver of the law. He was the man. And so it's easy to forget that when Moses first got called, he had no interest at all in doing what God called him to do. So we're going to start as Moses has now seen the burning bush, and he's approached the burning bush, and now God is talking to him, and this is in Exodus chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. It says, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt?' And he said, 'Certainly I will be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall go and worship God at this mountain.'" Now, this question that Moses asked God is a very generic question, and probably one that a lot of people ask God when they are called to do something. Listen to this statement and see if any of you have ever thought this when asked to do something involving God or the church or some kind of ministry. Who am I that I should do this? Now, how many of you have ever felt underqualified to do something? By the way, I'm always fascinated when you ask that question, no, and someone goes, "No, I'm always overqualified for everything I've ever been asked to do." It always tickles me that when we do church camp, campers always find the counselor who doesn't want to be there or least thinks they should be. So for the last several years, the vast majority of our junior counselors have come from University Church of Christ. Caleb and Sam and Ryan and Colin and Carissa, Kaylee worked this year. I'm sure I'll probably forget somebody because there are so many of the kids that have worked. But Emily Pressey, but the one, Hazel Smartnick, but the one who never will work camp, Amelia Smartnick. And last summer I went up to Amelia and I said, "Amelia, why don't you want to work camp?" And if you've never spent a lot of time talking to Amelia, you may not appreciate this. But I said, "Amelia, why don't you want to work camp?" And she goes, "I hate kids." Now, if you'll take a minute and absorb the irony of the fact that she is a kid, there clearly is some self-loathing there. I don't know. We'll work on that. So this summer, I don't know if it was because of COVID-19, she just had to get out of the house. I don't know if she just was tired of hearing all the other counselors come back and talk about how much fun they had, but Amelia went to camp. We had two baptisms this summer. One kid who was from Christ Church over at the mothership, she got one of the camp staff from her church to baptize her. So we had one other camper this summer that got baptized. And all the staff they could choose from, guess who they wanted to baptize her? Amelia Smartnick. It never fails. So when you get called to do something, God usually knows what he's doing. And normally we find out, oh, that's actually, I was better qualified for that than I thought. But Moses is standing there before God and he's like, who am I? Now, let's take a minute and think about how stupid of a question that is. I need someone to go to Pharaoh, and I'm going to pick you. And Moses says, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Now, who can tell me why that's a stupid question? Jason, why is that a stupid question? Because Jason raised his hand, and I've gotten in. Sorry. Go ahead, Jason. You know this. You taught this. Why is it a stupid question? This guy had been raised in the court of Pharaoh. He knew the protocol. He knew the language. He knew the process. He knew the people. You could not have found a more perfect person. And yet when God came to him and said, hey, Moses, I need somebody to go to Pharaoh. Help me get my people out. He's like, who am I that I should go? I don't know. Prince of Egypt? Daughter of Pharaoh's son of Pharaoh's daughter, grandchild of Pharaoh. I don't know. A guy raised in Egypt who knows everything about the court. You're perfect. Why me? Why me? Now, let's be honest. Why do you think Moses asked this question? Because he already knows he's perfect for the job. Why does he ask the question? Because he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to do it. It's not necessarily about qualification. It's just about desire. I don't want to do it. I mean, look, I just married this girl. Her dad's got a lot of sheep. And so I'm tending the sheep. I'm taking care of things. I've got a new family. And I just fled Egypt, in case you weren't watching. I don't want to go back. Well, I don't want to go back. I just got here. I'm safe here. It's not safe there. I don't want to go. Moses said to God, who am I? And that song, the line in that song, who are we? We are who he says we are, right? So the song says, I am who you say I am. So if God calls us to a ministry, he is saying by default that we are qualified for the ministry, or he wouldn't call us. And so the question, well, why me? I can't do this. We are who he says we are. And so if he says we're qualified for ministry, guess what? We are. We are. Moses is like, who am I? I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And God's like, certainly I will be with you. How many of you have ever been asked to do something by somebody and you said, I don't really know how to do it? And they said, don't worry, we'll walk you through it. And then you started working on it and they were gone. Has that ever happened to you? And you're standing there like, everybody's gone. Yeah. Now you can just look it up on YouTube. There's a YouTube video for everything, by the way. And by the way, one thing that's fantastic about YouTube videos is sometimes you watch it and those people are as lost as you are. They're just filming it. I remember going, we had a, back years ago at the camp, we used to have this thing at the end of summer. We used to call it Last Chance Retreat. And it was like a last weekend at the camp for all the kids who were senior high school age. And it was like before you go back to school, we'd have this thing. And so one year we had a planning meeting. And I was the youth minister that time at Hunter's Bridge. And the minister, I actually want to say he was at Mount Pleasant at that time. Guy's name, if by the way, if he's watching online, hey, Ron. His name was Ron Roach. Ron was the minister, and Ron was in charge of recreation, and I was his assistant. And I said, Ron, what do you want me to do? He says, just show up. I'll have all the stuff, and you can just help me run everything. I said, fantastic. And so I get to the camp at 3:00 Friday afternoon, and Ron's not there. And at 3:30, Ron's not there. And at 4 o'clock, Ron's not there. And kids are starting to show up. And so I go in the camp office. Richard let me use his phone. And I called Ron. I said, "Ron, where are you?" Now, back in the days of landlines, that was always a stupid question to ask somebody. Because if they answered the phone number you called, you knew exactly where they were. So he answered the phone. I said, "Where are you?" And he goes, "I'm in my living room." And I said, "Why aren't you at the camp?" And he goes, "Oh." It's not like he had a kidney stone. He said, and then there's a pause. And then he goes, "That second is the one that got me. I don't think I'm going to make it." I said, "You forgot, didn't you?" "No, I didn't forget. I've got something going on." I said, "You're in your living room." "Okay, I forgot." And then he said this, "But you'll handle it." I got nothing prepared. I got no equipment, nothing. And thus began my life of winging it. For those of you who wonder where it started, that's where it started. And it went fine. It went okay. But the reality is that it happens sometimes where we get put in a job and then all of a sudden we find ourselves alone. God doesn't do that to us. God doesn't do that to us. He says, "I am going to be with you." Okay, Catherine, our next text is going to be in verses 13 and 14 of chapter 3. Verses 13 and 14 of chapter 3. So Moses has now asked that question. And so God has answered it. So now Moses has to come up, of course, with another one. And Moses said, "Behold, I'm going to the sons of Israel, and I'll say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you.' Now they may say to me, 'What is his name?' What am I supposed to say?" And God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, 'I am has sent you to me.'" Were any of you ever babysat by a sibling? Did that ever happen to anybody in this room? Am I the only one that... Ricky, you had a sibling that used to babysit you? Anybody else? DJ? Jimmy? Yeah, Jimmy. Yeah, Wendy. Yeah. My sister used to babysit me because she was 6 years older than me. And so she would babysit me. And I would say something like this: "You're not the boss of me." And then I'd say something even stupider like, "Who put you in charge?" And she would say, "Mom." That never went well. It's always good to be able to tell people who gave you the authority. We live in a really interesting world now where we find that we always have to defend our opinions, right? We have to defend our point of view. If we're Christians, we find ourselves having to defend why we believe what we believe and what gives you the right to tell people what they should and shouldn't do. And, you know, we get that stuff all the time. And so Moses is thinking, "I'm going back to the children of Israel," and they're going to say, "Who put you in charge? You've come back to tell us what we're going to do and how we're going to leave Egypt. Who put you in charge?" And so Moses, what am I supposed to tell them? I can't go back and be in charge of these people. They're not going to listen to me. They're going to want to know who put me in charge. And so Moses, when he tries the "I'm not qualified, who am I" route, and that doesn't work, he pivots to this. Well, they're not going to listen to me. They're going to want to know. They're going to want to know who put me in charge. What am I supposed to tell them? And God says, "You tell them I sent you. And I'll tell you my name." Now, it's interesting. Think about this. Why does Moses want to know God's name? By the way, if you think about it, in our culture, what do we call God? We call him God. But God isn't a name, it's a title. Right? If you look at most cultures, when they talk about their God or gods, they all have names, right? In the culture that Moses had grown up in, who were the gods? Ra, Osiris, Set, Isis, I can't hear you. Baal's not Egyptian. Baal's not Egyptian. Seti, there are a bunch of them. Horus, that was a good one. So you've got all these Egyptian gods. And by the way, if you go into Greek or Roman culture, all the gods have names. Our God, does he have a name? Yeah. His name is I Am. I Am. In the Hebrew, Yahweh. Yahweh. And so Moses is like, I'm going to go back and they're going to say, who sent you? And I'm going to say, I don't really know who he is. Now, if you're an Israelite and Moses comes in and says, by the way, I've been sent by the God of your ancestors to tell you what to do. And they're like, oh, really? What's his name? Well, we're not really on first name basis. I don't really know his name. And so Moses is like, they're gonna pressure me, they're gonna ask me, they're gonna want to know who gave me this responsibility, and I don't know what to tell them. And God says, you tell them, I am sent you. That's my name. That's what you tell them. You work under my authority. When we work in the church, now there's a big caveat here. This is how it's supposed to be. That's not always means how it always is, but this is how it's supposed to be. When we do work for God, we're supposed to be working under whose authority? God's authority. Now, sometimes we work under our own authority. We kind of decide for ourselves. We used to have this joke in meetings. It was like, there are two ways you can pray at a meeting. You can either pray for God to bless the decisions you make, or what? You can pray for him to guide the decisions you make.
I get an A.
You get an A for church today, Bev. Well, it's only one question. Let's not get carried away. You're a pass-fail, you're passing right now. Sometimes we do that. We decide, I'm going to do this, and we run into something and go, okay, God, bless this thing I've decided I want to do, instead of, God, guide me in what you want me to do. And those are fundamentally different things. Let's be clear about that. So Moses has now, he has questioned, am I qualified? He said, they're not going to believe me. Who am I supposed to say sent me? And now we get to the third text, which is from chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. So Exodus 4, verses 1 through 5. Now, Moses has now confronted these questions. And so this is what he said. Then Moses said, what if they don't believe me or listen to me? For they may say, the Lord has not appeared to you. Because, people make that stuff up sometimes, right? The Lord has not appeared to you. The Lord said to him, what is it in your hand? And he said, well, this is my staff. And he said, well, throw it on the ground. By the way, if the Lord was talking to me, this is where he would have lost me. Throw it on the ground. Poof. So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Stuart ran away. That's how that verse would have ended. By the way, if you notice, it says Moses ran away too. He threw it on the ground, it became a serpent, Moses fled from it. But then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand and grasp it by its tail. And this, folks, is why I didn't go to Egypt to free the children of Israel. Because I would have, no, I got a lot of faith, I don't know if I got that much. Pick it up by the tail. So he stretched out his hand and caught it, and it turned back into a staff. That's pretty cool. Never to be used again. Now, if you look at this text, I'm not qualified. They're not going to believe I have authority. And then it's like, well, now they're not going to believe what I tell them. They're not going to believe what I tell them. I've got this message for them, and they're not going to believe me, because when I say, well, God sent me, they're not going to believe me. This to me is kind of the fear of failure kind of thing, right? When we have a text that we're challenged to go do something, and we're terrified of failing, and so we decide, I'm not going to do it. If this may not work. How many of you have ever refused to try something because you were afraid it wouldn't work? Probably most of us. My dear friend who used to preach over at Greenville Church of Christ, Carl Etchison, and Carl was one of my best buddies in the ministry. He moved away to Houston several years ago, but Carl used to have this phrase he would use. He used it all the time in church. It was like one of my favorite little things that he told me I could borrow it. We used to have this running thing that if we borrowed from each other, we had to preface it with a wise man once said. So in honor of Carl Etchison, if you're watching Carl today, by the way, Carl's doing prison ministry now down in, he's not a prisoner, but he is doing prison, to clarify that, he's doing prison ministry down in Houston, Texas. A wise man once said, imagine the things you could accomplish for God if you weren't afraid. Now, you think about that statement, and you think about how many times you have been tempted to get engaged in some type of ministry, and then fear of failure, you're like, oh, well, and I guarantee you, not everybody in this room, but a lot of you in this room probably know someone you've thought about inviting to church, but you've already decided they say no. I'm not going to invite them because they're not going to go. They're not going to go. Now, I got that friend. He'd never go. I'm not going to bother inviting him, because if I do, he's just going to laugh at me, and I don't want him to laugh at me. And there's this thing I wanted to do, but I know I can't do it, so I'm not going to try that. And so what happens is our assumption or our fear of failure keeps us from doing stuff. And so Moses is like, well, what if they don't believe me? They're not going to believe me anyway. There's no reason for me to go because they're not. This is going to fall apart. They're not going to listen to me. So I'm not even going to go try. That's his thing. Now, if you're thinking, if this has ever happened to you, I want to remind you of something. There is a great story in the New Testament. Jesus was a great storyteller, by the way. And he told this story one time. He said, there's these three guys, and their master was going on a journey. And so he gave one of them 5 talents, and one of them 2 talents, and one of them 1 talent. And he said, here, take care of this until I get back. You guys remember this story? And so the master comes back, and the servant with 5 talents says, hey, master, look, I went out, and I made you 5 more. I got 10 talents. I doubled your money. And the master said, well done. Good and faithful servant. Fantastic. And then he went to the guy he gave 2, and the guy said, hey, master, look, while you were gone, I took the 2 talents you gave me, and I doubled it. I doubled your money. I got 4 talents now. And he said, oh, well done. What a great servant. Fantastic. And then he went to the guy he gave 1, and that guy said this. He goes, I know, and we're going to paraphrase this. He goes, I know you're a mean guy. You're harsh. You're a harsh master. And you don't tolerate failure. I know that's how you are. So I took that talent you gave me, and I went out in my yard, and I buried it where it was safe. And here it is, just like you left it, except it's a little dirty. Do any of you remember what Jesus said the master said to that servant? Lazy, wicked servant. You should know by now that I reap where I do not sow. This is how I've gotten rich. I take my money and I give it to people, and they invest it and make me more. You should know that by now. And so when he looked at that servant who was so terrified of failure that he buried what God had given him and then showed it to him on judgment day, and he goes, you're lazy and you're wicked, and I'm going to take from you that which I gave you. So he took that guy's talent, gave it to the one with 10, and cast the wicked servant out. Now imagine on the day of judgment, you're standing before God. And you walk up and you're like, what's up? He's like, hey, good to see you. So let's go over what you did with all the abilities I gave you. Let's go over all the things I called you to do. Let's go over how you did with all that. And you're like, well, look, first of all, I know how you are. You hate it when we blow it, when we do stuff wrong, when we just mess stuff up. So I came up with an ingenious plan to do nothing. And so I have spent my entire life as a Christian doing nothing, and I did it well. I never messed anything up. I never made a mistake because I never did anything. I never tried anything. I never attempted anything. I just showed up on Sunday, and I plopped down in a seat, and I was like, this is fantastic. They're leading me in singing, and they're bringing me a meditation, and they're preaching to me, and everybody's doing everything for me, and I'm not doing nothing, and this is great. Now, if the parable of the talent, if I'm interpreting this right, and you track with me, if you think I'm interpreting this wrong, tell me. God's going to look at that person and go, you wicked, lazy servant. Am I interpreting that incorrectly? Can you imagine hearing that from God one day? You're wicked and lazy. I gave you ministry opportunity after ministry opportunity. I gave you a certain set of skills. I gave you a particular set of skills. If any of you ever seen Taken, best line in the movie. I have a particular set of skills. God says, I've given you a particular set of skills. I've given you certain abilities. And I didn't give them to everybody. We were joking at camp a couple years ago, and somebody said, Stuart, this was a person that never worked with me before. It was a new person. He said, I'm here at Camp Wheaton, I'm having a hard time imagining what kind of church you could preach in. Some of you are sitting there thinking the exact same thing. Stuart, I've always had a hard time imagining. And we were laughing about it. I said, well, here's the thing. If every minister was exactly the same, people with particular tastes would have no place to go. You wouldn't have any choices, right? Wouldn't have any options. You know, God doesn't want every minister to be exactly the same. By the way, if you go back and look at the 12 disciples, did he pick 12 guys exactly the same? No. He picked some fishermen. He picked a tax collector. He picked, a zealot, a militant, violent guy. I mean, he picked a lot of different types of personalities. Then later, he picked a Pharisee. All right? If you want to include Barnabas, he picked a Levite from Cyprus. I mean, he had a wide spectrum of guys. Why did he pick a wide spectrum of guys? Because there's a wide spectrum of people he wanted to reach. So the truth is that God doesn't call us all to be exactly the same. And so we look around the room and it's like, well, I don't have the same skills as that person. Well, if everybody in this room had the same skills, we don't be able to do one thing. And so we have people in this room who can teach, and we've got people in this room who can sing. And we got some people here who are really good with kids. And we got some people here who really that's not their thing, and that's okay. You know, some of you are really good. You enjoy visiting with older people. Fantastic. You know, I tell people all the time, working at camp is not everybody's thing. And every once in a while, we'll get somebody there and it's like, yep, this isn't your thing. I mean, you can tell, hey, good for you for trying, but it's not everybody's thing. And that's okay. But God calls us to do ministry. And so when our whole thing is, well, look, I don't want to fail. And so because I don't want to fail, I'm not going to try. That's a dangerous attitude. According to the parable of the talents, that's an incredibly dangerous attitude. And so Moses is like, what if they don't listen? And God's like, you let me worry about that. Let me worry about that. Here, show them a trick. throw your staff on the ground, let it turn into a snake. That'll get them. All right. If that's not enough, Moses isn't done. All right, we're going to go to verses 10 through 14 of chapter 4. Exodus chapter 4, verses 10 through 14. So Moses has tried three different approaches to getting out of this thing where what about this? And none of them have worked. And so then he gets to verse 10, and this is my favorite. Then Moses said to the Lord, please, Lord, I have never been eloquent. Neither recently or in times past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. For I'm slow of speech and slow of tongue, except when I'm making excuses, which he seems to be pretty eloquent when he's making excuses. By the way, just close your eyes for a minute and picture what God's face must look like as he's hearing Moses say this. That's probably exactly what Moses sounded like to him at this point. Okay, now keep in mind, this is the guy who was raised in Pharaoh's court, which means he had been trained in the art of speech. He had been groomed to command and lead as the grandson of Pharaoh. He was somewhere. We don't know where exactly in the line of succession he was, but as Pharaoh's daughter's son, he was somewhere in the line of succession. He had been trained to be Pharaoh. I'm not a good talker. I picture Mel Tillis for some reason. The Lord said to him, and I could almost picture God rubbing his forehead while he's doing this. Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Isn't that me? Says the Lord. Isn't that I? Now then you go, and I will be with your mouth, and I'll teach you what you need to say. Okay, so that seems like a reasonable answer, right? No. Moses said, please, Lord, now send the message by whomever you will. Now, if you're wondering, there should be in parentheses behind that, except me. Because hasn't God already picked someone? So, Lord, look, you send this message by whomever you will. At verse 14, then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses. Now, we're not going to read the rest of the passage. I just wanted to get that first line in there because I'm not really interested in talking about Aaron today. Sorry, Aaron. Aaron's sitting there going, what? I've sat through this whole sermon waiting. Do any of you ever worry that you make God mad? Now, that's something we don't talk about a lot because we emphasize, obviously, New Testament church, we emphasize a lot about grace and we emphasize forgiveness. And so we put a lot of emphasis on that. But I want you to think about at some point what happens when we give enough stupid explanations to God about why we can't do something. Do you ever wonder if the anger of the Lord burns against you because you just totally refuse to do the things he wants you to do? I got this ministry I want you to do. Who am I? I'm not, you can't send me. I'm not qualified. Yeah, I can send you. Well, what if they want to know why I have the authority to tell them this? You let me worry about that. You just go say, well, what if they don't believe me? Just go. Well, I'm not a good talker. I mean, it sounds funny. When we read it, it sounds funny, right? I mean, we're like, Moses made some excuses. He actually made God mad. That's pretty funny. Who in here really thinks it's funny that God gets mad at you? That you have denied his calling in your life so many times that he's fed up with you. He's like, you know what? I don't know what else to do. I've done everything but engrave an invitation for you. It's in all over my word. I've given you every opportunity, every ministry chance. I've done everything but come down there and grab you by the hair of the head. That's harder for some of us than others. I've done everything but grab you by the hair and drag you to the ministry opportunity. And then I think of this saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So, simple question today for you as you sit here and as you're watching online. Real simple question. As you search your heart and you think about the things that have happened in your life and the relationship you have with God, and you start to think, what has God called me to do? And am I doing it? And I start thinking through the excuses, and here's why I told him I couldn't. Well, Lord, you know, I'm busy. You know how much stuff I got going on. You know, I've got all these things going on. And, you know, by the way, there are other people who'd be better for that. That's not really my thing, and it's inconvenient, and I'm tired. And Lord, what if I don't do a good job, and what if they don't like me? And you think about all of the things you have said to God over the years in making excuses why you should not do that thing which he's called you to. And then ask yourself this question. Have you made so many excuses that today, when someone in heaven mentions your name to God, his anger burns? Oh, that person, don't even mention that person to me. I have begged and pleaded with them. I've given them every opportunity, every talent, every skill, every mentor, everything. And they are wicked and lazy. They won't do anything. And one of these days, I'm going to take their treasure that I entrusted to them, I'm going to take it from them. I'm going to give it to somebody else. Because they have failed to answer my call in their life. Now, as you're sitting here this morning, it was funny because we always think, oh, mission field. Well, this is not about the mission field. God doesn't call everybody to be missionaries, at least not overseas. But I will tell you this with certainty. If you identify yourself as a child of God, if you identify yourself as a Christian, God is calling you to something. He's not calling us all to the same thing, but he is calling all of us to something. And I'll bet you anything this morning, as you sit here in this room, most of you know what he's calling you to. Most of you know. You know. And you're like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. That's not my thing. And you've made excuses and excuses and excuses and excuses. There's going to come a day when, like those three servants, we're going to stand before our master and he's going to call us to give him an account of what we did while he was gone from this world. I've given you these opportunities. I've given you these options. I've given you these skills. What did you do for me? Folks, let me tell you something. It's going to be an embarrassing day for a lot of people when this is their answer to Jesus, when he says, what'd you do for me? And you went, I sat in a chair once a week for an hour. Woohoo! I'm amazing. And he's going to be like, that's it? That's what you're hanging your eternity on? That's what you're hanging your eternity on. You sat in a chair for an hour a week? It was a big sacrifice, man. That guy you had preaching, he was awful. And you know what he's going to say? He was trying. He at least answered the call. You didn't answer nothing. Every time I called you, I got your machine. We're going to sing our hymn of invitation this morning. And as the praise team comes up, actually, we're going to sing our communion hymn. But as you start to think about what God is doing in your life and what he's calling you to do and what he's given you the ability to do and the ministries he's calling to. Guys, we're not talking about getting on a plane and going to Ethiopia. We're talking about the people in your life that don't know Jesus. We're just talking about being a good witness. We're talking about, you know, inviting them to a small group, or hey, come up, look, why don't you come to our house, have supper? We'd like to share something with you. You know, we would give you our testimony. We always think that God's asking us to do some huge, crazy thing, but the reality is, and this is a simple. I mean, this is simple mathematics, guys. If everyone in this church invited 10 people to church every year, and you had a 10% success rate, the size of the church would double in a year. That's simple math, right? I didn't mess that up, did I, Stephanie? No, she said, no, that was fantastic math. 10% success rate. If we just invited 10 people a year, that's not even one a month. 10% success rate, we'd double. Go back over the last 10 people you invited to church. How many years does that add up to for some of you? Some of you are going, I don't know if I've ever invited 10 people to church. Oops. What is God calling you to do today?